I'm Fathery.
This is Dave.
And this is Text Trek.
Engage.
Something different this time.
We are doing something different with the 35th installment of the Text Trek podcast. I know you weren't expecting this. Sandwich in between our Star Trek Discovery coverage.
Sounds so dramatic. I know you weren't expecting this, but something very bad has happened.
You might have been expecting it because I was hyping it up weeks ago, but we're going to talk about Star Trek The Cruise, which I attended earlier this year.
Yep. I'm going to quiz you on it because I've never gone to one of these things. I haven't even been on a cruise before, so I don't know how this all works. I assume you were beamed up just like in Galaxy Quest, and you talked to the aliens and you told them to give them both barrels. And
yeah, so before we get started, for those of you who don't know, they started this last year in January of 2017. Every year they have the official Star Trek cruise that departs from Miami. And it's basically like a convention on a cruise ship. So
I was holding up your pamphlet.
Dave, what would you like to know?
I've got a technical question first. How many people are on this ship?
Well, that's a good question because the cruise was actually, this year, they did two different voyages. Mm-hmm. One week and then immediately this week two would begin. The same programming for both weeks. Both were...
different guests lists?
No, same guests.
Same guests.
Same everything. They're both intended for 2,000 passengers. The cruise they did last year was around 2,000 passengers, I believe, and it sold out completely. So this year they did two. Mm-hmm. However, they didn't all sell out, so the prices got so low, a bunch of people were booking for both weeks,
mm-hmm.
Which I might have done if I could have gotten off work that much.
Was it just, like, even though they have the same programming schedule, you would just be able to, like, see more from when there was, like, if there was two things going on, you could go to the other one?
Exactly. And they actually didn't have as many people on Voyage 1, because that departed on January 6th, I think. It was right after there had been some bad weather in the Northeast.
Ooh.
So a lot of people missed their flights and couldn't go.
Uh-huh.
Actually, Jonathan Frakes, who lives in Maine,
mm-hmm.
missed his flight, so he had to fly down to Honduras and meet us there.
Oh, shit.
Robert Picardo, who plays the Doctor on Voyager, and Ethan Phillips, who plays Neelix on Voyager, their flight out of New York was canceled. So they took a train in the middle of the night to Washington, D.C.,
uh-huh.
Hoping that they'd be able to get a flight there, with no idea if they could or not.
Uh-huh.
And then they were booking flights, the flights were getting canceled, they were rebooking, and they finally were able to book a flight early in the morning at 6 a.m. in Washington, D.C. and fly down to Miami. And they made it onto the ship.
You got to respect the dedication of people doing that. It's kind of cool because it's like they had an adventure. It's like Star Trek as hell.
Yeah, it's like the Doctor and Neelix on like a, you know, like running to catch a train.
Like a buddy comedy and shit.
Yeah, yeah. So that
the Doctor
awesome.
And Neelix would be like, would actually be perfect for a buddy comedy scenario like that. So.
Yeah, they're two of the funniest guys in the franchise.
I was going to say, I assume that they that the actors who portray them are exactly the same as their characters.
Ethan Phillips is actually a Talaxian.
Right.
And Robert Picardo is a hologram who has to have a mobile emitter.
Right. Which he calls his wallet. So 2,000 people, but a little bit less?
Yeah, because they didn't sell out, and also because some people missed it.
Right.
Which made it more convenient, because they didn't have as long of lines at the bars, and you know stuff
right.
like that.
And I guess the idea on a cruise like this is, I mean, there's already the the ship is going somewhere, and you're going to go and, like, enjoy the normal cruise stuff, but then there's, like, a, also it's like there's an ongoing convention, sort of, right?
Yes, well...
And is it, like, and real quick, is it 24-7? Is there, like, always something Star Trek-y going on? Presumably not after hours,
like,
right?
Like, things mellow out at, like, maybe 2 o'clock at night.
And then, like, 2 a.m.?
Yeah, and then, like, resume at, like, 9 in the morning.
Oh, man.
So,
like, what's going on at midnight?
They have a bunch of after parties. They had bands on the ship, so...
Okay.
People in costumes, so lots of drinking,
but
dancing,
I mean, like,
partying.
Is it Star Trek kind of themed bands and stuff?
They had a band called Information Society, which I actually never got to see them, but I did see DJ...
That was like a real band, right?
Yeah, they're a real band.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. But I never checked them out. I was just busy.
Wait, are they the ones
stuff,
that did that Pure Energy song that sampled Star Trek back in the 80s? Pure Energy.
I think so, yeah.
Oh, shit.
That's why they got invited. They had a cover band, which they were pretty good. Band 47, because 47 is the Star Trek number.
Right.
They had a DJ Needles. But, like, every night kind of had, like, a different theme. Like, there was the Hollow Disco night one time. So there was, like, some, like, Endorians and bell bottoms on the dance floor and...
Okay.
You know, stuff like that. But, yeah, it was you definitely had, like, your night crowd who was drinking and partying.
Right. And that would also sometimes include the guests?
Yes. Depending on the guests. Some of them, like Jonathan Frakes, for example, even after he finally made it onto the ship... I never saw him anywhere. He stayed in his cabin unless he had, like, an appearance to make somewhere.
Uh-huh.
Same thing with Brent Spiner. But some of the other guests were more...
Were they just being antisocial? I know some of them got sick.
Yes. Well, Carl Urban was actually sick when he got on the boat, and I didn't see him until, like, the last night of the cruise was when he finally, like, came out of his room and he did, like, a Q&A panel.
Right. So, okay, so we'll get to the guests in just a minute, but, like, where was the cruise going?
We went to a little island off the coast of Honduras called Roatan.
Mm-hmm.
We went to Belize, which wasn't real Belize, but we'll probably get to that in a little bit if we talk about the individual, like, excursions.
Yep.
And then Costa Maya, Mexico.
Okay. And did you get decent weather?
Yeah, there was not a drop of rain the entire first week that I was on. The second week,
I know you're kind of a winter guy. Did you enjoy this tropical delight?
Yeah. So, just to let y'all know, I hate the warm weather. I grew up doing a lot of farm work and yard work in the Texas heat, and then I worked 3 summers in an aluminum smelter that was hotter than hell.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of, like, despise any temperature over 20 degrees Celsius for the international audience. That's 68 for the Americans.
Thank you.
But
fucking snob.
The cruise was actually, I did go in January.
Yeah.
So it was only, like, in the 70s
in
all these places. So it was very tolerable for me.
Mm-hmm. And where did you depart from?
Miami, Florida.
Miami, Florida. So you had to do some flying and stuff to get down there.
Yeah, so we flew into Miami from Austin, Texas.
Yep.
Miami, I'm sorry if any Miamians, whatever, Miamos? I don't know what they go by.
Yeah, I don't know.
But
write us and tell us. There's no way to know otherwise.
That city, maybe I just saw, like, the bad side of it, but it kind of sucked from what I saw.
Oh, wait, like, what all can you really see when you're passing through to get to the airport and stuff? You just mean you didn't like the looks of the buildings?
I think I might have been.
Or were there, like, street gangs, like the warriors roaming the streets?
I might have been in the ghetto of Miami. Or it might all be like that, I don't know, but... the funny thing, the Floridians there were freaking out because the weather was so cold, it was getting below 50 degrees Fahrenheit, and they just couldn't believe that.
I mean, that's not so different from Texans.
No, the Texans aren't going to freak out if it's 50 degrees.
No, that's true. That's actually, like, yeah, that's, you got to get down to, like, the 30s for us to, like, really not know what we're doing.
Yeah.
But, so you made it there, ship left on time?
Yes.
And just, like, real broadly, what was your... Had you been to any of these before?
No, I had never been on a cruise my entire life.
So what was your first impression, like, walking on? Like, is it like walking up to the ship in Titanic? Is it, like, that looming? Like,
well,
you know...
Did it
look Star Trek-y? Did they do anything to make it look Star Trek-y?
Sure. Well, you board in, like, a... Similar to, like, an airplane terminal at the airport.
Mm-hmm.
And you go on, like, this bridge from the building into the... It's connected to the ship. So you get on board, and as soon as I walked on, it was playing the theme music from Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home.
Nice.
Which I think is the most, like, optimistic, uplifting,
and
positive...
At times, or maybe
Star Trek
is
music.
Your favorite Star Trek movie? I know it was, at least, like, when you were younger.
Yeah, it was definitely my favorite one growing up.
But now yours is Star Trek Into Darkness, if I'm not mistaken.
It's funny, just... No, but... although I've been known to defend that movie at times, but it is far from my fave.
Okay.
Before we were recording, me and Dave were actually talking about how I have this weird thing where I tend to not like happy music. I'm more into, like, metal and gangster rap and, like, old-timey, like, bluesy country music.
Mm-hmm.
But I love the theme music to Star Trek IV, the happy, uplifting, energetic vibes from that just, like, always make me smile when I hear it.
Interesting.
So I hear that when I walk on board, and then there are these... workers on the ship wearing the red Uhura skirts from the original series, like, handing us our programs and have the schedule of all the things going on.
That's pretty cool.
And then we walk onto the atrium of the ship.
Well, I'm going to interrupt for real quick and just say, in general, like, if there were, like, various people who, like, were in costume and stuff, did it lean towards the original series, Next Generation? Or was it, like, only original series kind of costumes and stuff? And flavor.
Are you talking about, like, the people who were passengers or, like, the people working there?
People working there.
The people working there weren't really dressed up except for this one time.
Okay, I wasn't sure if they were, like... Because you mentioned, like somebody on the dance floor or whatever doing, like, a disco Andorian thing or something like that.
Yeah.
But was that a guest?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so...
That's something else I wasn't sure of. Was, like, did people cosplay?
There is a shitload of cosplay.
Oh, okay.
From every show, and they even have...
I guess that makes sense. Star Trek, like, invented cosplay. For some reason, I was just thinking because it was a cruise, it'd be more of a pain in the ass for people to be messing with bringing costumes and stuff on board, but...
Yeah, that's what I thought, but there is actually really elaborate cosplay.
I guess Trek fans are kind of dedicated.
And one night was actually a costume party, when there were some people dressed up as, some non-Star Trek properties. I saw a Jedi Knight.
Fuck that, get off the boat.
And
You get the plank.
I saw a couple of people in Orville uniforms.
Uh-oh. That's going to start some... that's funny. I figured that we're about to hit the first conventions that's going to have that, though. Which should make for some... Actually, that should make for some amusing photo ops. I'm going to go ahead and, like, let's do a quick diversion there to before going back to, like, kind of main programming. What were some of the cool cosplay costumes you saw?
I saw the rabbit from Shore Leave.
Oh, wow. Man, that's a deep cut.
I saw a Gorn and a Mugato couple. The Gorn was wearing, like, a apron. She was the woman. And the Mugato was wearing the apron. The Gorn was the man.
Okay.
I saw a Gorn...
I don't know how I feel about enforced gender roles on Star Trek creatures, but, you know, it seems to be in good fun. I guess those are otherwise somewhat sexless creatures unless you know where to look.
Sure, I guess.
I mean, I guess the Gorn broadly looked male. But yes, I can see they were having a little bit of fun with it. What else we got?
I saw the Mirror Universe versions of the Next Generation crew from the recent Scott Tipton and J.K. Woodward miniseries, Star Trek The Next Generation, Mirror Broken.
They were actually based on those.
Yeah,
not just fans that just happened to do Nick Picard. They were actually based on his
own. Yes, there was Mirror Universe Picard, Mirror Universe Data, Mirror Universe Troy. And the cool thing was that artist J.K. Woodward was actually on board the ship.
Right.
I think I've mentioned before we actually got an interview with.
Yep, you had to hang out a little bit and chat it up. Do we have that interview in the editing process?
That's going to get posted around the same time as our Mirror Broken review. So expect both of those sometime after the Discovery season finale.
He seemed like a super cool guy from what you told me.
He is a super cool guy, and y'all should all not only check out his comics, but also check out his podcast, Go Trek Yourself, where you can get his thoughts on Star Trek Discovery.
Oh, and looking at the programming guide here, which maybe we can superimpose this for the YouTube version of this, but he did the art for the Star Trek Cruise 2 thing that had
the
various
poster.
Guests in a beautiful, realistic paint, photorealistic painted style, including like... guests from all these different eras, including what's his name? Carl Urban from the is he the only one in this list who's not from the TV show.
Yeah, he's the only one from the Kelvin movies.
Yep. But that it is a gorgeously painted piece of art there.
And just, I guess we should talk about the guest list a little bit.
Yep, let's hit it.
You know, so we have Carl Urban representing the Kelvin movies.
Mm-hmm.
We had George Takei, who was the captain of the cruise, representing the original series. A lot of Next Generation and Deep Space Nine people. We had Gates McFadden, Jonathan Frakes, Brent Spiner, LeVar Burton, Michael Dorn, Armin Shimerman, Rene Abijah's whatever French name, who plays Odo.
Yep.
John DeLancey, and Jeffrey Combs, who plays Wayoon, Casey Biggs, who plays Damar, and then for Max Grodinchik, who plays Rom, and then for Voyager, there is just Ethan Phillips and Robert Picardo.
Did you mention the actress plays
Nana Visitors, who plays Kira?
Right. That is a pretty strong ass list. Like, if you were going to a comic
Denise
convention...
Denise Crosby also.
Oh, okay. Is she not in the piece of art here?
No, they didn't have everyone in the artwork. And there were some non-actors on board.
JK, why you want to snub Denise Crosby, man?
She only had so much canvas to work with.
I know she got killed by a tar monster, but geez.
He actually painted her, and then he painted Worf over her, because he took her position in the show, so...
I thought you were going to say that tar monster that destroyed the image. So yes, if you were going to, like, just a standard Star Trek convention or a comic convention, that would be a fantastic lineup.
Yeah.
That's a really broad variety, a lot of big names, a lot of good side characters and stuff. Did you interact much with the... did you get much interaction time?
Yeah, some of the actors were more eager to mingle with people.
Mm-hmm.
And I even hear, like, some people, like, ask about, like... or even mention, like... Well, you should be able to, like, go and, like, up to and talk to all of them. Which, if you think that... I mean, like, you gotta remember, like, these people are spending a large chunk of their lives, you know, interacting with fans. And
right.
If they want their alone time, you know, that's fine. Like, a lot of them were there with their families. Michael Dorn was there with his wife and kids. And I got an anecdote about Michael Dorn that I think we'll get to in a little bit. But
okay.
Guys like Jeffrey Combs, I actually talked to a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
LeVar Burton, I was in an elevator with.
Huh?
And he's kind of a short guy. And I wanted to tell him... or we should also talk about, like, the actors were performing and doing certain performances over the course of the voyage.
What does that
mean? I'll get into that in a second. But,
okay.
For example, one of the first nights, LeVar Burton did a LeVar Burton Reads type of thing.
Okay, I was going to say, he's been very active lately doing his own podcast.
Yeah.
Where he's like, yeah, what is it like? It's essentially reading Rainbow for grown-ups.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, serious. But
call something different so PBS doesn't sue him.
Right.
But he did, like, a Reading Rainbow thing, where he read, like, some, like, these childhood books, or children's books. He read one that he had written himself, and then he read an excerpt from Octavia Butler. If anyone's familiar with her, she's a very brilliant science fiction writer. A piece that she wrote that actually horrifically, frighteningly predicted 2016 America.
Oh, God.
With some things... like verbatim from what we heard from certain politicians 2 years ago and are still hearing, which was, it was freakish to hear that someone had written this years earlier.
Yeah.
But I actually, in the elevator, I had an ice cream cone in my hand because you know, like all you can eat buffet. So, you know, why not eat a shitload of ice cream?
Hell yeah.
And it was kind of like crowded in the elevator. And I wanted to like turn around and tell them, hey, I really liked your Octavia Butler thing that you read, but I didn't want to talk to, like, this shorter guy with, like, my ice cream cone, like, right in his face, so I gave him some space. I just said, like, you know, what's up, and left him alone, but...
I have to think, like, that they probably appreciate the fans who can show a little bit of restraint. At the same time, it always has to be, I'm sure, a difficult decision to make, like, when else am I going to get a chance to put ice cream in the face of a barber?
Yeah.
You know, like, maybe I should just do it and just let the consequences of chips fall where they may... because it could be an amusing story. But yeah, I always try and be kind of chill around guests and stuff at conventions.
Yeah, I walked by this one bar and saw Nana Visitors and Gates McFadden and Denise Crosby. All, you know, they were sitting around a table drinking wine. They were talking and laughing. He's like, I don't want to like go interrupt them and bother them. They're,
it's like those. It's like their characters from the show are just chilling like they would be. It's cool.
But
when you got on board the ship, like, general impressions? Like, did it look cool? Did the panels and stuff look cool?
Oh, yeah, like, everything was decorated. Like, restaurants were renamed to, like, reflect Star Trek names.
Nice.
They actually have, like, an Irish pub on the ship called Finnegan's.
Uh-huh.
So they had pictures of the character Finnegan from Shore Leave, like, hanging up on the walls and stuff.
That's awesome.
There's a steakhouse that was, like, made into, like, a Klingon restaurant.
Uh-huh.
And they had, like, the Klingon insignia hanging down on banners.
That's really cool.
There is this one, kind of like the club area that had the dance floor. It's on the very front of the 13th deck, and so like they renamed it 13 Forward, kind of like 10 Forward on the Enterprise, the Next Generation.
Mm-hmm.
So the elevators were all decorated.
Y'all only drank Synthahol, I hope.
no Synthahol. No. We did the real shit like Scotty would do.
Or probably on Discovery, too.
But they did have Star Trek-themed drinks. There was I drank some Romulan Ale. I drank Aractogeno. Mm-hmm. I drank some Saurian Brandy.
What was that second thing you just said?
Aractogeno. That's Klingon coffee from Deep Space Nine.
Ah, okay. That's why I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah, Sisko doesn't talk to anyone until he drinks his Aractogeno. Because he's not awake until he drinks his Aractogeno.
Makes sense.
Janeway was a coffee person, too.
Yeah, I know. That's like, what? Star Trek probably should have, like, Ran with that as one of their advertising things.
But this was an Irish Aractogeno, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Sounds all right.
but we were, I think we were talking about, like, the performances and stuff that they did. John Delancey put together this play, because, you know, they're a bunch of actors, so
yeah.
the easiest way for them to sing for their supper would be to act, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
John Delancey put together his little play of the Scopes Monkey Trial.
Huh.
If you're unfamiliar with that, it was an actual court case that happened in the United States of America back in the 30s, I believe, and the entire script was essentially from the, what do you call it, the typewriter lady in the courtroom?
Stenographer, the transcription of the...
it was basically the entire transcriptions of the trial, and so that was really fun to watch.
Yeah, yeah. It made into the famous play and movie Inherit the Wind, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's basically evolution on trial in the school setting versus biblical teachings. That's interesting that he would choose that. Delancey seems like a kind of a cool dude.
He is nothing like Q in real life. He is super calm and mellow. And has a very, like, soft voice. And he's very tall.
Not mercurial. Yeah. And how would you describe Q? He's, like, pissy.
He's a big, tall, broad guy. And you'd think he'd have, like, the super large presence. But he always, like, he'd kind of, like, talk. If you talk to him in the hallways or anything, he'd have, like, his hands together like this.
Okay, so he's, like, kind of more of an introverted kind of
like, he'd smile and nod and just be very calm and soft-spoken. Like, complete 180 from Q.
It's interesting. Must have been acting.
Yeah,
but I do think there's sometimes. I do think there's a lot of kind of introverted, inward drawing type of actors, and acting is their kind of way to get that other part of them out.
Sure, so yeah.
It sounds like he might be one of those guys.
Yeah, that's why you like to read Shakespeare.
It's true.
Dave normally doesn't talk to people.
It's all these meaty parts.
There was also some show tunes from... there's the Star Trek Rat Pack.
Please tell me you're about to say George Takei.
No, the gay guy was not involved with the show tune, surprisingly.
Sorry.
But, yeah, Max Grodinchek, who plays Rom, and...
who's that?
Quark's brother on Deep Space Nine. All right,
sorry. So, these Deep Space Nine things I'm too stupid to get.
Him and actually Armin himself, and they had Ethan Phillips involved, mm-hmm. and Casey Biggs, and Jeffrey Combs. They all did the Star Trek Rat Pack thing, where they sang some pretty funny songs. They had one called A Board Named Hugh, which was a parody of Johnny Cash's A Boy Named Sue.
That's awesome.
And and it was actually performed by Von Armstrong. He plays Admiral Forrest on Enterprise,
mm-hmm.
Captain Archer's boss.
Yeah, yeah.
You know that one, right?
Yep. He's a jerk.
So he's not a jerk.
Hey.
He's always supportive of Archer.
Yeah, that's true. I was thinking the Vulcans.
In fact, they should have had more drama between him and Archer, I think.
Yeah, sometimes they missed some opportunities there.
Enterprise missed opportunities? They only did that for three of their four seasons. But they also had Brent Spiner did some musical numbers. What am I missing? Ethan Phillips did comedy.
It seems like every actor is a wannabe, you know, like musician or musical theater guy.
Yeah, well, you know, like a lot of people come up through Broadway and do things where they have to sing and dance.
I just realized that it can't be long before the Orville does a full-on musical episode. Seth MacFarlane, there's no way he could resist that for any length of time. Just saying. Yep. I bet season two will have it.
That happens in genre shows sometimes. Buffy and, was it Flash or Supergirl who did it?
They did a crossover that had it. And back in the 90s, Xena did it.
I know, but was it Supergirl or Flash?
That, I don't know, I guess I thought it was... Oh, I don't know which one it was. It wasn't a two-parter?
I don't think so. I think it was just one episode. Someone comment and tell us.
Yeah, there's no way we'll ever find out otherwise. but yes, a lot of people want to do that. And if you've got people who have voice talent, then it's an obvious thing.
Gates McFadden, I think, did yoga or something. I don't know. I didn't go to it.
I think she was, like, at some point... Didn't she, like, do set design or costume design and stuff? Like, for, like... I feel like she worked on, like, the Dark Crystal and stuff, right?
Gates McFadden was a dance choreographer before she was Dr. Crusher. And maybe after she was Dr. Crusher for a little bit. Oh, one that I'm forgetting is Bob O'Reilly, who plays Chancellor Gowron in The Next Generation in Deep Space Nine. Mm-hmm. Actually donned full Klingon makeup and costume and did a Klingon pub crawl, which I participated on.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in Klingon makeup also, because makeup artist John Paladin was on board, and you could pay him to get makeup to be an Andorian, or a Vulcan, or a Cardassian. So I chose Klingon.
You've got this as, I think, as your profile picture on Facebook and stuff, right?
Yeah.
Still, it was pretty good. Like, I'm sorry, Discovery, but his Klingon makeup looked better than your Klingons on Discovery, but that's just my opinion.
Well, mine looked cheaper, but...
They were the cooler Klingons.
And I got to keep the prosthetics and everything, because I paid for it. So really? I can glue it back on.
You can Klingon up at a moment's notice, in case you need to infiltrate the Discovery.
There's a funny story about that, is that... and John Paladin's gluing this on. Uh-huh. After it's, like, already done. And I think I have a time-lapse video that I can I can share with folks. So you'll see this soon. If you haven't seen it already, I might have posted it already, but... I asked the guy, like, after he's, like, done this makeup on me, I said, so, how would I take this off? And he said, oh, just use some rubbing alcohol on the silicone glue. It'll come right off. The ship's store should have some. They didn't. So, after, like...
Salt water should do this.
Oh, well, I did try vodka. So I ended up, like, ripping off chunks of my eyebrows and my sideburns and my flesh.
Yeah.
And also had, like, chunks of silicone glue stuck to me for a couple of days.
You know, it's pretty Klingon, ripping off chunks of your eyebrows and sideburns and flesh.
I have another story I'm not going to say publicly. If enough people, like, post a comment to ask me to tell them, I might tell y'all. But Dave, I'll tell you later.
Okay.
But I'm not gonna tell our audience tonight.
Did you have, like, some Klingon codpiece on or something?
I'll tell you about it later.
Okay. And so... when you get there, like, did you kind of generally, is it like when you're attending a comic convention and you, like, basically want to get there when it starts and, like, all day long, you're just, like, there's programming all day? Or were you, like, spending some time, I'm going to go and I'm going to hang out on the deck and I'm just going to enjoy the sea breeze? So, or I'm just going to go drink today?
As someone who has never cruised before, from what I understand is that a lot of times, you know, cruise ships, they are very laid back. Depending on what cruise line, some of them have, like, more structure and scheduled stuff, but some of them are more, like, chill and informal, and a lot of people, you know, just lay around and read, and you have, like, you know, servers can bring you drinks, you can go eat or whatever you want
to
do.
Sounds great to me.
Yeah, basically like being in a nursing home out at sea.
I like it.
Yeah, Dave would like it.
Yep.
But yeah, this cruise was very different from that, because you could do that if you wanted, but there is so much stuff to do, mm-hmm. and so much interesting stuff to do. And some of the events were repeated, so if there's like a conflict in the schedule where there's more than one thing you wanted to do...
You would actually still have a shot at it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, when I was in San Diego a few times for Comic-Con, which is as crazy as a comic convention gets, I think I've been out three times.
When was the last time you went, though?
Like, mid-2000s.
Okay, so it's already huger.
Oh, it was, yeah. It's definitely become bigger and more Hollywood-y and all that stuff. But it was crazy at the time.
Yeah, no, it's still super big then.
Like. There was so much stuff going on that, like, I didn't particularly get to check out San Diego, other than, like, wherever I might have eaten in a given night, mm-hmm. you know? So, yeah, it can, like, if you're trying to, like, get shit done and, like, maximize, you know, probably in some ways what you're paying for, yeah, you know, you're kind of just, you gotta focus on it a little bit.
Yeah, and there was also, like some really normal convention stuff, like Q&A panels, autograph signings, photo ops.
Any representation of current stuff, like Discovery producers, or, I mean, like, or anything, or, you know, comics that are coming out from IDW?
Well, there was some comic stuff with J.K. Woodward
sure.
involved. As far as Discovery, there is actually, like, no Discovery representation on the ship. However, that's going to change next year, because while we were on board the ship, they actually announced that they had just signed Dr. Culber actor Wilson Cruz.
Yep.
And Laurel actress Mary Chifo
mm-hmm.
to attend Star Trek The Cruise 3 happening in January 2019.
Nice. I mean, it makes sense. It's like it's literally just establishing itself right now that they might not have a lot of representation year one.
Yeah. I should say that the voyage I was on, it did not show the new Discovery episode that came out.
Mm-hmm.
However, I heard they corrected that on the second voyage. They had a screening of both episodes, the one that they missed the previous week, and then the new one that came out that week.
Mm-hmm.
I should also say that the cool thing is, because it's like a hotel room. You have a TV in your cabin, and they had two channels that were playing nothing but Star Trek.
Nice.
And a lot of them were episodes that kind of, like, showcased some of the characters that the actors were...
That were on board.
Were on board. So, yeah, I was like, oh, like they put a lot of thought into a lot of things like that. And they also had, like, this big Borg cube on the top deck next to the swimming pool.
Uh-huh.
And all four sides of the cube was, like, a TV screen.
Oh, nice.
And they would have, like, movies every night. They'd show a different movie out there.
Comparatively, like, how big a Trek convention is this, like, in compared to the other Star Trek conventions?
I mean, I would say it's... Because there aren't that many dedicated Star Trek conventions anymore.
Right.
I would say it might be the biggest one next to Las Vegas.
Okay. That's what I was... Because it sounds like they did a pretty polished effort. Did you get a sense, like, were things running behind, long lines? Like, were there any problems?
Not that I can think of. Things tend to run pretty smooth. I don't know. There's a lot of things I didn't do. Like, I didn't get any autographs or any photo ops, except for I did get a picture. Me and my girlfriend got a picture with George Takei, because that was part of our package when mm-hmm. when we booked the thing. So
nice.
He was really cool. I got to, you know, shake his hand and take a picture with him.
Takei's like second set of era of celebrity is like kind of awesome.
His husband Brad was on board. He did a screening of his Broadway musical Allegiance,
right?
About the Japanese internment camps, which I've heard about for years. I finally got to see it. Some of it was like a little hokey because it is super Broadway musical-ish, but it actually was like a really powerful story, and there were some like really well done dramatic moments in there. I would recommend checking it out.
I guess I didn't know it was a musical.
Yeah. It's also, unfortunately, strangely topical right now.
Yeah, gee, I wonder why. it's scary when like, you want Star Trek to be able to teach lessons that are, like, you know, that aren't immediately, like, vital and relevant. And I know that's not the Star Trek story. It's, like, the historical thing. But it's, like, that's what makes it so scary.
Well, binging...
We have a short memory as a species.
Binging all 700 episodes of Star Trek not too terribly long ago,
mm-hmm.
It was frightening how many things from an episode of television from the 60s or the 80s or the 90s...
Feels prescient or applicable.
Yeah, felt super applicable. It's like, man, we have not learned anything.
Yeah.
But that just means more people need to watch more Star Trek.
Obviously. So all right. So, like, you want to take us through some highlights, or tell us about some experiences with some of the guests?
I think I should talk about, like, some of the excursions, like when we got off of the ship. Because we did actually leave. Me and my girlfriend actually departed on all three of the stops. The first one in Roatan, Honduras.
And how long were you there?
We were there 6 hours maybe.
Okay.
So, you know, pretty much all day. Well, you know, got off at like 10 in the morning, came back around supper time, and we went on a little tour. They went to like an animal sanctuary. We got to like pet monkeys and parrots, and we actually saw this little super touristy but still cool to check out. There was an area where this English pirate named John Coxon used to stash his gold. And
that's pretty cool.
It was called Coxon Hole, was the name of his stash.
I'm not even going there. It's easy.
Obviously, play on the words fox and hole. Nothing dirty about being called Cox and Hole.
Nope.
Where John Coxon stashed his gold. Apparently, he used to be able to like find gold walking around there, but the Honduran government will take it from you if you find it. Then we went to the beach there, which the beach was lovely. I'm not a big beach person.
Mm-hmm. Really?
But, yeah, it's so much prettier. I love Texas,
yeah.
But we have the ugliest water. Like all of our rivers and lakes everything, they're all like brown.
Yeah.
Like you go to other parts of the world and you're like, this stuff is clear or blue and it's so pretty.
Right, it's like how it looks in movies.
Yeah. So I was at the beach and I saw Michael Dorn was there with his family. He was, you know, running around on the beach in his swim trunks, splashing in the water and stuff. I actually, I went up to him and I asked him, you know, do you mind if I take a picture with you?
Yeah.
He's like, please, not like this. And I'm like, you know, in my swim trunks and not now.
Today is a good day to swim.
Can we not do that now?
Yeah.
Is what he said to me. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, no, that's legit.
I did eventually get a picture with him on another excursion. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so that was Honduras. Then we went to Belize, except it wasn't really Belize. So this is my one complaint about the thing. Was that the stop was a little island that was owned by Norwegian Cruise Line.
Okay.
And everything on that island was super expensive, like all the food and the drinks. And I only went on board because I wanted to like, find a bar or a restaurant where I could use Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
And there is no Wi-Fi on the island. So you'd have to go into mainland Belize to use that. So that stop kind of sucked, and...
Yeah, that's kind of crazy backwards in this day.
I think it was called what was it called? Ivory K or something. Mm-hmm. I'll try to remember.
I suppose unplugging might be the very reason some people would go on a cruise was to like get away from Wi-Fi and unplug.
But don't go to this island this island off of Belize, owned by Norwegian Cruise Line. Like, y'all should boycott that.
Little tourist trap kind of thing. You're like, well, I guess I'm going to spend $20 on a beer.
Yeah, we spent $80 just getting, two burgers and fries and a plate of nachos. And it was, like, $80.
Jesus Christ.
With a tip included.
Wow.
But, whereas on the ship, we could have ate
normally
for free.
You have to do that at, like, a movie theater.
Yeah. But that was the cool thing about, you have all these buffets and stuff, or they have, like, sit-down restaurants where you can just, like, order as much as you want.
Yeah.
The food varies in quality, but it's free. And if you want to get, like, good food, you have restaurants on the ship where you can pay for it.
Mm-hmm. But, buffets generally pretty good, like...
Yeah, some things were better than other things, but, you know, like, buffets typically are.
Yeah.
But the final stop I want to talk about was our favorite, and that was Costa Maya, Mexico, which... Just me being from Texas, I kind of felt more at home in Mexico than either the other places.
We're with our neighbors, kind
of. Yeah, people speak an accent of Spanish that sounds super familiar to me. The Mexican food is good, and I don't know, like even like the terrain, like the ground just felt like normal. They're like, this is normal grass I'm walking on. Like,
yeah.
They're like, look, like there's cows and barbed wire, and so I felt very at
home. You're
among
there. Iconography with which you were familiar.
But there were some unfamiliar things, like the Mayan temples. They let you just, like, walk on those. You can't go up to the very top. You can still, like, you know, crawl around on them a little bit. Yep. And we were walking around with Armin Shimerman and Denise Crosby and Michael Dorn. And this time, Michael Dorn let me take a picture with them.
That's pretty cool.
Because he was fully dressed.
Yeah.
And I also got a picture with Crosby and Shimerman as well.
They didn't want you to take a shot of his dad bod.
And our tour guide was so cool. She was carrying an umbrella, and she called herself the Mexican Mary Poppins. And she'd be like, follow me, just look for the umbrella. And she was like, she heard like these other actors were, because it was supposed to be an excursion with Armin Shimerman. Mm-hmm. And I think like Denise Crosby and Michael Dorn, they were just going because they just wanted to see it.
Right, right. They weren't part of the tour.
Yeah, so our tour guide found out about these other actors, and she was, like, pulling them out of, like, other tours that they were on so that we could get pictures with them. So she was super cool. And that was all three of the stops. I know next year they're doing some different ones. They're doing one of the Cayman Islands and Jamaica and somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
So they do change the destinations every year.
This is going to sound weird, but if you're only there for a few hours, like, I'm just assuming all these dramatic movie-type things. What happens if you're late? What happens if you get drunk and you pass out and you're not there? Do they just take off without you?
Yeah, I guess you either, become a Honduran or try to find the United States Embassy.
I mean, I assume that there's people there ready to prey on Americanos and that are... looking to, like, put you in some sort of hostile torture situation or something like that. No, but, like seriously, like, I guess... I feel like if I, like, got more than, like, 20 minutes away from where the ship is, that I would, like, start to feel kind of jittery and nervous. Like, what if something happened?
I'm not that paranoid.
What if I had a seizure? Clearly you survived.
Yeah. Just don't fuck up and you'll be fine. But the people there is, funny you mention that, is like, if people wanted to prey on tourism, a lot of these communities near, like, these tourist attractions, they economically really rely on tourism.
Right.
So everyone is super polite to you.
Right.
And
you're not going to get called out as the ugly American you are.
Right. And they love for people to come there. They want you to feel safe and comfortable because that's, like, a big part of the economy in those mm-hmm. areas.
Yeah. No, that sounds nice. What else do we got from?
And there weren't just Americans on the cruise. There's a lot of Canadians, some Australians, mm-hmm. some George Takei mentioned he heard people speaking Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
There were a couple of Brits. Well, I'm thinking this, a lot of people were, like, proposing and getting engaged.
Really?
So yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
I just remember that cuz there's an English couple that did that on top of, like, one of the Mayan temples. And, like, next to, like, me and Denise Crosby, like, witness this together.
Oh, wow. I thought you were actually, or meaning that people were, like, doing Star Trek proposals on the cruise. But they were, like, doing it in the places you visited.
Well, and on the boat, too, I guess.
Okay.
But,
what else was cool?
There was... I should talk about how I actually watched the Star Trek Discovery episode that I would have missed.
Oh, yeah, it was pretty cool.
Which I mentioned this in our...
Because it had to be kind of torturous podcast. To think that you were going to miss this show that we, like, love and that we podcast about, and you're on a fucking Star Trek cruise, and they're like, you can't watch Discovery.
Yeah, so... And Julie actually listens to us now. So, Julie, if you're listening, thank you again. I got your email.
Thank you, Julie.
She works online a lot. She's a journalist. So mm-hmm. she went, when we were in Honduras, I think, she went to shore and was working on her computer. And someone had sent a file of the episode to mm-hmm. her. And then she arranged with some other people to screen it in, like, one of the larger cabins. They have, like, these big suites
yeah.
that cost a lot more that I can't afford.
Yeah.
And... She screened it for us there and, invited some people to, like, come and check it out. So, and she also let me borrow her thumb drive so that I could show it to J.K. Woodward, who was bummed that he couldn't see it.
Man, that's cool.
And so...
Yeah.
That was fun.
Awesome on her part, and it's cool that you got to hang out with J.K. Woodward. Aside from being an awesome comic book artist, the guy who designed the images, the promotional images for the actual cruise itself... You had to hang out and watch Star Trek with him.
And talking about, like, watching...
Well, what episode was it?
Oh, it was the... it was episode 12. Or no, episode 10. So it was the first Mirror Universe episode.
First Mirror. I couldn't remember if it was first or second one.
Yeah, and the cool thing with him is he did the Mirror Broken comic.
Yeah, yeah.
So I got to, like, ask him, like, what do you think about these designs? And he's mm-hmm. like, oh, yeah, like, I almost went in that direction of, like the Roman armor. You know, it's very different from what I finally ended up with. But, you know, it's super cool. I like it. And he was super stoked on the episode. And
yeah, that had to be fun.
What was also cool was talking to him about when we saw...
That was the episode where, like, among other things, that, like, midway through is when they make over the Discovery Mirror Universe style,
yeah.
right? Yeah.
And when Burnham has that cool elevator fight.
Yes.
Oh, no, I was on the ship with the guy who directed it, Jonathan Frakes.
Yeah.
And he was actually wearing his Star Trek Discovery, like, crew hat that, like, the people on the crew when they're shooting the show must wear.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I assumed it was. But another cool thing about J.K.
Woodward... Did you get that shirt on the
Yeah,
on
I'm
the
wearing the shirt that says, Ripper is my spirit animal, which was available in the gift store. So there was a little bit of Discovery representation.
Did they have the disco shirts?
No, but I take it back. What I said earlier about there not being any disco representation... So they did have some of the props. They had, like, the phaser rifles, the communicators.
Yeah, yeah.
So I have pictures of that. If you're watching this on YouTube, you're looking at superimposed pictures of that right now, I'm sure.
Yep.
But, yeah, what I was going to say about J.K. Woodward was, when we saw the cosplayers as his Mirror Universe creations,
yeah,
he said that, because, you know, people who are plugged into the comics, like me and Dave, we hear this all the time when artists talk about, yeah, it's so cool, like, when you see people cosplay as your designs. He never gets to experience that because he only does, like, licensed stuff. It's always, right, like, a pre-existing design.
Right, he's working with something that people are already, they're going to be dressing up as, yeah, because it's a set property.
Yeah, so when he got to create these Mirror Universe designs, he finally got to experience, you know, seeing someone, you know, bring it to life.
That's awesome.
And so, that, yeah, that was really cool to, like, get to see his reaction to that.
Mm-hmm. What other... Any notable panels that you attended?
The one with Carl Urban was kind of fun because he had been locked up in his cabin sick for like the entire week.
So I don't know if you want to say shitting. I don't know. I'm not going to poke at it.
He's just great with a crowd and he's super nice. He was a big fan of Star Trek himself. So he's fun to talk to. He's fun to interact with. He actually like walked out on stage.
Did he just say that just to win you over?
No, he knows his TOS shit. Like, if you ask him about original series stuff, he knows. He knows this, all this, not just Bones, but all those characters inside and out.
Okay, that's cool.
But it's funny because he walks out on stage.
I wouldn't be offended were he not, other than if he pretended to be.
Yeah, sure.
But I don't require, like, actors can act. They don't have to be fans. But it is kind of an extra level of cool when they are.
He walked out on stage and he says, so I don't know why the people, arranging the entertainment wanted me to do this Q&A panel. I thought we would all have more fun if we were just, like, drinking at the bar and taking selfies with each other. But they told me I have to do this, so ask me your questions.
Yeah, yeah. That's awesome.
Jonathan Riker, Jonathan Frakes,
yeah,
hosted a Riker chair sitting competition. I actually didn't get to witness that. I was busy doing something else.
The famous Riker straddle.
Oh, they had... So one night, it was the Ryza Moon Festival.
Yeah.
And they had, like, the giant, the Ryzen statue that you display when you want to get some Zarahemon, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
So that was on... So he, like, did, like, the introduction for that. And he was almost, like, giving us, like, a dad speech. He's just like, be sure you make good choices.
That's awesome.
So, That was a lot of fun, and I'm trying to think if I skipped over any. Oh, okay. Here's another cool thing: is one night they did.
Did they have them drink too much and throw up?
I'm sure some people might have.
No, you saw.
I mean, I'm a pro, so that doesn't happen. last time I drank too much and threw up, I was like 12. they did have a Star Trek Hollywood Squares,
mm-hmm,
with George Takei as the center square.
Nice.
And one of the squares is actually, it looked like the exact 1966 Arena Gorn costume.
Oh, man.
So this Gorn comes out on stage and gets in one of the squares. And if you don't know how Hollywood Squares work, it's basically like tic-tac-toe. And just Google Hollywood Squares. I'm not going to explain it to you. But somebody like asked a question to the Gorn, yeah, and he's like speaking in Gorn language without nice. Without the translator that the Matrons provided in the episode.
Right. It sounds like they put on a pretty polished production with, yeah, these, and like it sounds like was kind of the I was going to say was the recurring thing in this, the humor. It sounds like when they did their like skits and like scenes and things like that, those were probably pretty straightforward, but it sounds like there was a lot of humor running through it.
Yeah, and there was some more serious stuff. Like a lot of the women actors did do a women's perspective panel,
mm-hmm,
which I caught the second half of because I had to skip the first half to go on the Klingon pub crawl.
Yeah, I would have liked to have seen that. Do you happen to know if any of the folks from Women at Warp, the podcast? Were
they have a contributor who was there, who, I'm sorry, I can't remember her name. I'm scared, like, she's, like, going to check this out and be like, my
she's
name
not gonna
is...
She's not going to check this out.
Yeah, okay. She might. But, yeah, they have, like...
They're just a cool podcast. It would be...
They are. I should love them. Women at Warp is off the chain.
Yeah, I've been listening to them, just random episodes lately, and really enjoying their perspectives.
Yeah. They definitely bring up a lot of things that I hadn't thought about that...
And obviously, like, I would imagine, like, I wouldn't be... would have been surprised if, like... Because when I'm listening to it, they'll talk about moderating at various... conventions and panels and stuff like that. So I just wondered if they might have had a role in this.
And none of their regular hosts are there, but they do have someone who attended who contributes to their blog.
Nice.
That you can read at womenatwarp.com.
I should see if they reported on it as well, if they had anything to say about the panel there. So was this, as experiences go, pretty happy with?
Yeah, I was super happy.
Would go again?
I can't afford to go every year.
Yeah.
But
what if you could?
I would for sure go. And my plan now is to hopefully go every other year, because I can afford that. I mean, this year was kind of an anomaly. There were some cheaper packages that you could book because they weren't able to sell out. So
right.
I mean, it got down to like $300 for a week.
Well,
which is insane.
That is insane.
But the, I mean, like, for me, on our end, you know, the two of us stayed in a smaller cabin, the flight to Miami, the drinks that we bought on there, it was, for both of us combined, it was, like, between $4,000 and $5,000, which is a lot of money for us.
Yeah.
You
I usually assume a trip like that is going to be, like, something like $2,000.
Yeah, whenever you go overseas from America, that's normally if you're going to be gone for a week, other countries and stuff.
Yeah,
but the cruise experience is nice. Everything is super convenient. You get so much stuff, like, you know, provided to you, and the service is awesome. So if any of this sounded fun to you and you have the money and time, I 100% endorse it and tell you to try it. And hopefully I'll attend. Hopefully they have cruise number 4 that I'll be able to go on, and we might be able to chill together.
Be cool. We can have we need to go there formally as with Text Trek press credentials.
Yeah, I don't think that we're gonna get an invite.
No, let's get cowboy hats.
I got a couple, so
saying if we play that part up, whether they people like Texans as a theory, in theory.
Dave, you kinda suck as a Texan. Do you have any cowboy hats?
No.
Do you have any boots?
No.
Do you have any belt buckles?
I'm an Austin Texan.
That doesn't. There's a lot of Austin Cowboys.
Yeah, no, I'm not a cowboy.
But, yeah, I for sure want to go again, and hopefully will someday. And I can't recommend it enough.
Any notable surprises or anything that occurred in there? Like anything that threw you for a loop?
I gotta say, I was surprised John DeLancey is so like. Calm and peaceful.
Yeah, yeah.
Anything?
I don't know. Didn't you tell me they told me some ribald jokes from Robert Picardo or
no, Ethan Phillips did stand up comedy.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Okay,
that was pretty fun. One other thing that they did. This is interesting. So, the previous year when they did the first cruise, they had one destination that people couldn't attend. It was like raining or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah, rain or it was bad weather and they couldn't go there. I don't know what the deal was. I wasn't there, but so they were screening some Star Trek episodes, and for some reason it was like a because it was a last minute thing and the audio wasn't working. And so Denise Crosby got a microphone. Maybe she did like an introduction to it. And she was doing, like, Mystery Science Theater commentary over the episode that was playing. And that was so funny and so popular that they brought that back for this cruise as, like, a planned thing. But it was her and Ethan Phillips and Renee. And they chose what is possibly the worst episode in all of Star Trek, and the Children Shall Lead.
Yes.
And so they're like, just... talking in stupid voices to be like the voice of Kirk.
That sounds
and
super
Spock
fun.
And
yeah,
you got to hear like where Denise Crosby's go-to comedy things were. They apparently were gay sex, pedophilia, and diarrhea. There's like the, where she goes to get all of her cheap jokes, but it made me laugh. So.
You know, when I watch like improv shows, like Whose Line Is It Anyway, and any kind of improv shows, that's pretty common.
Scatological, yeah, common
sexual
ones.
Humor. And, yeah,
that's a low hanging fruit. But when you gotta like keep going constantly, sometimes you gotta throw in some low hanging fruit.
If it's delivered with some wit, you know, it can work out.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that when Discovery does a comedic episode, it's just going to be nothing but that.
Well, that show is so funny now.
Oh, that made me laugh because, yes.
But people online are getting so frustrated.
Agonizer booths.
People are getting so frustrated online with all, like, the Kelpian jokes that are circulating. Like, this is the dumbest thing ever.
Really?
I saw an ad for Red Kelpian. It was, like, Red Lobster. But it had a plate with, like, Saru's head on it. And it had, like, this, like, little
like,
girl.
Like, were people offended by it?
Yeah, like, people are getting offended. I was like, do you have a loved one who is, like, consumed by cannibals? Like, how is this, like, triggering
also,
you?
The show brought it up. The show had, I feel like, almost darkly humorous at that point. And like, it was, I mean, it was just dark, but it's so messed up. It's messed up. Like, she picked out her dinner. She didn't know.
So this one ad for like Red Kelpian, it has like this little girl like pointing at one of like the three Kelpians that are in the lineup. It has like this little blonde girl like pointing at one of them, like it's the one that she's picking to eat,
like a little kid picking out their lobster.
Yeah, and she's like smiling. She's like, yeah. So that was but yeah, that like offended people. Like people comment like, stop posting this stuff. It's not funny.
Okay, whatever. I feel like there's probably some better stuff to rail about than some slight mildly distasteful Star Trek humor inspired by what was actually on the episode.
Yeah, they said that in episode one they're a prey species, like you know they gotta taste good.
Oh my god, this is what we're gonna get in trouble for.
So perhaps they'll have like a Kelpian buffets in next year's cruise.
You know, if they had that and like, you know, that was like the sushi and stuff like that, and that, you know, the little slices of cucumber where they're ganglia or something like that, I'd be down with that.
Yeah. And, anyone who is on the cruise, this year or last year, please, comment and let us know your thoughts. If there's anything.
Yeah,
they
probably saw some stuff that you didn't see and stuff.
Like I know I had like a super positive experience. There might've been some problems that I just didn't see.
Right, or maybe people who've been on it many times before might have some perspective, things they got was better than the past, worse than the past, or anything like that.
We've only done it 2 years, but...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. It's not like some... this isn't a decade-running thing or something. Okay, well. In any case, it'd be nice to hear from them.
Yeah, but I think that about covers it. I'm sure later I'll think of things that I should have mentioned and forgot to.
I just added it back in. Just added it on the back end.
Yeah, we're like wearing like different shirts. There's actually one.
No, I'm not coming back. You just do a post show.
There is a YouTube episode of Tex Trek where Dave's shirt changes. In the episode, and if anyone can find it, leave a comment and let us know that you found it.
That sounds like just some mild production issues that we had in that episode. I'm sorry, we work with the special effects budget we have.
Yeah, so. Yeah, but we're going to go ahead and sign off, and we'll be continuing to post our regular Star Trek Discovery coverage. And I guess by the time this goes out, we're going to be like only 2 episodes away from the
finale.
From the finale. So
yeah.
That means I got to hurry up and get this posted within the next week.
Yeah, you should work on that.
Yeah, so.
But until that time.
Until that time.
Live long and prosper, y'all.
Thank all of you so much for checking out this installment of Tex Trek. I hope you enjoyed it. Please be sure to like our YouTube videos and subscribe to our channel. Audio-only versions of episodes are available at our website, www.tex-trek.com. Please check out our site, especially if you just want an audio-only podcast. We have that available for you. Y'all can also keep up with us online. You can follow us on Twitter, at TXTrek. Or you can check us out on Facebook at www.facebook.com/tex-trek. Please, by all means, let us know what you think by dropping a comment anywhere you see fit. We definitely want to hear your feedback. Let us know what you liked and what you would like to see more of, what you would like to see differently going forward. If you want to email me directly, go ahead. I can be reached at fatheryactual@text-trek.com. Thank all y'all again. Take care.